Inside the Cross Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to In the Crease. I am Dan Abram, contributing writer at Inside the Cross, and I am joined by...
I'm Kyle Devitt. I'm the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside the Cross, and it's the best week of the year, isn't it?
Why is that, Kyle? Why is that?
Because the cross is here. It's here.
No way.
It's here.
Kyle, I don't know about you, but I am fired up, ready to go for this weekend.
Yeah, you said you were extra charged up before the pod, right?
I mean, we're going to talk about this on the pod today because we have so much to talk about. But I went to the Maryland-Virginia game, and I was charged up to see some lacrosse again. So, like, even though it was a scrimmage, it felt like real, meaningful lacrosse.
How so?
Just because I felt like Virginia came to the end of that scrimmage saying, hey, like, we have an opportunity to show, you know, our new brand of lacrosse against a team that's 8 months removed from a national championship. So... I thought the product that they put on the field was awesome, but we're going to talk about this later because we have two more scrimmages that we want to talk about first. KK?
Word. Let's go.
All right. So first of all, we're going to start with the reigning national champions. North Carolina played Navy this past weekend on Saturday, and they lost 11-8.
Okay.
Reaction. Instant reaction. Do we put any stock into... preseason scrimmage
Have I shared my thoughts on this on the podcast? I feel like I have. Scrimmages mean nothing to me. Okay. Yeah, I don't believe in any sort of scrimmage score. I think scrimmages are to test lines, to test chemistry, to get your clearing right, to get your subs right, to try different units against each other, and that's where you get all your information from. I don't think... you can get too much from a box score, from a scrimmage. I just don't. It's all about reps.
I think there's some useful information in a box score, but not so much at the overall score. I don't think you should read into that at all. But going into it, I think, like you said, you want to use scrimmages to analyze how certain players play with other players, which lines seem to work well. And the interesting thing, I think, for this result, the Carolina-Navy result, was that Andy Matthews, a sophomore for Carolina, and freshman Justin Anderson both had two goals in this game. And those were two guys that, you know, going into the preseason, we didn't really know were going to be on our radar. So to see them have big games was interesting.
So here's kind of my take on when people use stats in articles in general and kind of like say a player had a good game. Like, how did the goals happen? I mean, I'm not asking you in like, this is more of a rhetorical, like, how did the goals happen? Did they come on a break? Did they come on a broken play? Did they come off a set? Did he create the goal? Did someone else create the goal for him? I think those are things that going into this season as someone that covers lacrosse, I really want to focus on more and get a better feel for, because I feel like that's one of the things that doesn't translate very well just straight up outside of coverage. You know, I think it's like kind of the next level that we need to get to. I mean, if you read any advanced NBA, NHL kind of coverage, yes, stats matter, but how the bucket happens, how the goal goes in, is actually just as important as the goal itself. So I think, you know, one of the things you can glean from a scrimmage like that is it's more important how it happened. Because if it's broken and those guys scored, then like, honestly, like, who cares? That's kind of my thought on it. Yeah. So, yes, great players get good garbage goals. Some players make entire careers out of garbage goals. But also, garbage goals can make you look a lot better than you played. You know, so the ultimate indicator isn't always who scored the goal, who set up the goal. It kind of starts on the other end with the goalie's outlet to the streaker. And I think that is something that going into this season, I really want to focus more on as someone that covers lacrosse for Inside the Cross and in general going forward and helping to kind of educate people and bring them into the sport. Because I think that's kind of the next level we need to get to as people that are covering, you know, lacrosse. And basically the source of lacrosse is Inside the Cross. So it's kind of our responsibility to up our coverage to that level. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do it every game, but I'm excited to try and, you know, Dan's part of the team this year. So, what? By the way, welcome to hell, Dan. If you
as if I wasn't part of the team last year.
No, but like now you're like really in the team. Like you were just kind of like carrying water a little bit, and now like you're gonna get reps. No, it's not a diss. You're getting the monies,
dude. I carried water my whole freshman year of high school. All right. So I know what you're saying.
Man, you know that now you're gonna play. So just so you know, forget having a social life. Forget like, you know, making plans for the weekend. No trips. Just wait till June, man.
Dude, my plan for the weekend is a lacrosse game. That's,
I know. I mean, I'm just listen. If you're trying to have another life, man, you're gonna have to wait a couple months.
Dude, a wise man told me ball is life.
Ball is life.
Ball is life.
Covering ball is not necessarily life, but now it is. Congratulations.
Gotcha. So, back to the original point with this scrimmage, but I agree with you in the sense that you should look beyond the numbers and you should have a healthy skepticism with about how a goal was scored. I definitely agree with that. We don't really know the details too much into this scrimmage because we personally both did not see it. So, which is why, actually, I think I'm so fascinated by it, is you want to understand why these guys scored, you know, why were they injured, what were the circumstances of their goals.
Also, who were they playing against?
Playing against Navy.
Right, but what line?
Exactly,
like what level of unit, like which unit was out there, was, you know, things like that are important. You know, I think we kind of highlighted this talking about, you know, Notre Dame versus Team USA in the previous pod where we kind of went into, you know, how the goals were scored for the U.S. versus how they're scored versus Notre Dame versus how they're scored against individual matchups. And that's really like something that adds value to, you know, not necessarily a scrimmage, but in a game. You know, it's an indicator of value. It's not just the goal. It's everything else around the goal. So.
Agree.
So with that in mind, let me flip this back on you. You saw Virginia Maryland in a scrimmage. In your opinion, seeing as how which unit was going up against which unit, who was the most impressive against the most intense opposition?
Good question. I would say, it's because I was particularly impressed with two of Virginia's sets. I really liked the people they trotted out at first midfield. And I also really liked the kind of the new look attack that they had going, which, so it's hard to pick between those two of them. But I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to say attack though, just to kind of make things easier, because I thought Ryan Lukovic, Zed Williams and Joe French, I just thought they played so much better than I expected. To be honest, I thought, you know, I didn't know really what to expect from them, and the way it played out, it was a thing of beauty. I just thought, you know. They wanted to make it kind of like a box-style game in a way, use Zed Williams' craftiness, Joe French's finishing ability, and then just Ryan Lukovic's overall dodging ability and feeding ability just made it a very, very hybrid box field kind of feel to that attack unit. And I was very impressed because even though Mac Pons didn't play, he's Maryland's number two defenseman, and Tim Muller did play for Maryland. He's their number one defenseman. But, you know, going against a team like Maryland, for them to have such a great game, especially after, you know, last weekend where they, you know, lost to Bucknell in a reported 9-7 loss, I thought for them to go out and have the day that they did, it was really impressive.
So with that in mind, watching that Virginia new look offense, how did this is actually just a Lars question. How many did they use a lot of picks? Because no one loves picks more than Lars Tiffany. And his staff, not just him.
I felt like that you could see that they had been working on it. And they were trying to incorporate it into their game. But it really kind of just felt like their offense was driven through the middies constantly dodging towards the cage. And if they didn't get it, they wouldn't re-dodge. They'd pass it back, and then a middie would reinitiate his own dodge. That's kind of what I felt, at least mostly in the first half. And a lot of goals, to be honest, kind of fell in transition, you know, in after a scrum, you know, off a calls turnover in the middle of the field, you know. I know Joe French, he had a very pretty garbage goal where he just picked it up. And I can't particularly remember if he delivered it behind the back or not, but it was a thing of beauty. I think he's going to have a great season.
Can I tell you what that says to me?
Go ahead.
They're looking for the guy in midfield still.
You think?
Yeah. Lars is looking for his controller.
Okay.
He's like, think of it as like an avatar. He needs someone to like plug into the Xbox and like control with the dodge and like get his mindset in there. And then I think what you see is a free flowing offense, but in reality, what it is guys getting to space. Yeah. And opening up for catch. Like a lot of Browns offense in the past couple of years has obviously been caused by transition, but it also is caused by disruption. And the disruption of a guy dodging down the wing and opening up for a shot is one of the first things they did. You know, that's what Brendan Caputo did. That was his role. And if you looked at his point totals, they weren't amazing, but he touched the ball in almost every possession. So I think what they're trying to do is find the guy that can be the first initiator and then get it to a guy off the catch to be the second. And then the third guy comes in to score or it pops back up top and we try again. A lot of that offense I think is going to be fascinating to watch in Virginia. I don't think, you know, I mean, we kind of have talked about this before. I don't know if they have all the personnel necessary to make that offense as effective as it was at Brown at all.
Okay.
But it's good to hear that they showed well, and they show well against good competition. I think that bodes well for them in the ACC.
All right. So my question for you is, you know, you being much more familiar with Brown over the past couple of seasons than me, you would say that last year's controller for Lars was Caputo. Is that what you're saying?
He was the initial guy because they did start a lot of their sets up top. Mm-hmm. And people, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people were like, oh, well, Dylan Malloy must have had all the runs. No, he got the second look.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. And he'll get the second look this year. I don't know who that guy is going to be for Brown this year. But I think that the plan is not for him to get tired dodging over and over, smashing into his guy. You know, that technique is a lot more effective off the catch than it is initiating with no pressure or pressure on you. So I think as it relates to that, the initiator at Virginia, I think they're still trying to find that guy. And I think at Brown, they're still going to, you know, I think Daly's system is a little, actually, controversial statement right here. Controversial statement. I think Daly's offense is more reliant on transition than Lars was.
Okay, that's 100% fair. I would actually agree with that.
I really think watching, because I watched Tufts a little bit too, especially the last couple of years. Man, they just run, man. It looked like horses versus ponies most of the games that I saw with Tufts, man. It really did. Like, and I don't think it's going to be like that at Brown. Like, you're going to run horse versus horse. I mean, you're going to have to find that guy, and I don't know who that is for Brown. I think we're going to find out real quick.
Yeah, and kind of just to go off of that, but I thought, you know, watching this scrimmage that Ryan Conrad was their primary initiator. I felt like, well, first of all, he kind of did everything for them, but it almost seemed as every offensive set started with the ball in his stick, him dodging. If he didn't get a look, he'd pass it back, and they would start their second and third looks.
Yeah.
I feel like him and also maybe A.J. Fish, those are the two guys they wanted to do it with on offense, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, but you got to have somebody comfortable with the ball. In the Brown offense, you got to have somebody, everybody has to be comfortable to a certain extent, but you have to have more than one initiator, more than one creator in that offense for it to work. You know, I mean, in this kind of system you're describing, I mean, Zeb Williams doesn't have the physicality that Malloy has, but I think in the system you're talking about, he's going to be the Malloy.
That's what I thought.
That's kind of, and I'm not surprised by that at all. That would have been my pick regardless of what you were saying and before I saw any games. And I think that's going to do really well. I think running the ball through him, and he played a lot of midfield in the past. I just feel like getting him in a position where he can catch and dodge instead of be the guy that draws the hard-working pull that gets slid too quickly. I think if UVA can manufacture ways to get him a ball in an advantageous position where he can dodge, feed, or shoot,
mm-hmm.
The triple threat, I think that's going to do really – it's going to do wonders for his career. And he's one of those guys that had so much, you know, potential going to Virginia. And now you know, in his senior year, he's basically going to be in a position to succeed and that he wasn't in before.
I would agree. And I want to agree with exactly what you said. I kind of felt like if there was one player who resembled kind of the facilitation of Dylan Malloy, it was Zed Williams. And I'm going to use to describe this goal that he had to kind of give it in context, where they had been moving the ball around a little bit, and Zed decided to dodge from the wing, and he got into a position where he had that triple threat, where he could have scored, he could have passed, and he decided to pass to a wide-open Joe French, and Joe French scored an easy goal. There was the slide came, he was wide open, there was no contest on the shot. Yeah. And I felt like if they can do that every single game, their numbers are going to be crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with I don't want to like give this away. I'm sure everyone kind of knows this. If you can play a strong, smart zone and win faceoffs against that offense and not play man, kind of kills the offense a little bit. So
that's definitely fair.
I think depending on their level of success, I'm sure everyone's going to just play straight up against UVA to start until they prove themselves anyway, which is the case. You know, you should do that. But yeah. I think that one of the ways to neutralize that, we saw Bryant do that last year against Brown. That's how they beat Brown, is they beat them on faceoffs. They scored, they matched them in transition and scored almost as much as they did, if not more, in that game. And they had a quick adjacent slide down, shut down the crease, and had the two come from the other side. And if you do that against the UVA offense, what is now the UVA offense, I think you're going to have similar results. But I don't think that's going to happen until Virginia shows some success, which it sounds like they're well on the road to showcasing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the overall impression I got from this scrimmage was that at least what they put on the field on Saturday, it was a good template to start with what they want to work with maybe 1 to 2 years down the road, that they had something that they could work with this year that seemed to actually be pretty successful. I mean, 17 goals against Maryland's pretty damn good. But another thing I wanted to point out with you is that instead of long poles, it seemed to be that, you know, they're in the middle of the field game. It was going to be facilitated by fast short sticks.
Yeah, they probably, I mean, and that probably goes to the fact that we spoke about when we were talking about Virginia in previous podcasts, which is I don't think they have the athlete they need at the long stick position to impact the game they want. So they probably, I mean, it's a little late when you get to college to convert someone to a long pole.
Exactly.
We've seen it happen. I mean, Joel White's a great example of that, right? Mm-hmm. But it's probably not going to happen for a lot of their guys they're bringing in. I'm sure they're looking at that aspect for sure. How well do you play in between the restraining lines? Can you shoot? Can you handle? Are you okay staying on the field and pulling a guy away so we can play 5-on-5? That's kind of what they're going to be looking at going forward. But I'm not really surprised by that. I just kind of thought going into what they have to work with this season that would make the most sense.
But do you think that in the future Lars would recruit long poles who can fit that role?
I mean, isn't everyone?
Yeah.
Isn't everyone? Isn't that
seems to kind of be like the
Scott Ratliff mode, like guy who's nasty on defense, throws a lot of checks, picks up a lot of GBs, is capable of shooting, is capable of feeding, and comfortable with the ball. I mean, what more do you want from your LSM, really?
Yeah, it really is a trend, and we're already kind of seeing it being played in the summer. You know, we see guys like, ooh, this guy would fit perfectly into this offense because he's, you know, an electrifying LSM.
It's funny. It's like all those guys that played defense but really wanted to play attack, like finally found a home.
Yeah.
Like in lacrosse. And used to be the LSM was like for me, when I was coaching, the LSM was like, all right, who's fast? Who's got lungs? Who can run for days? And who likes hitting people with the stick? That's the LSM. Like, I always sub my LSM off on clears. Do you know what I mean? And the game has totally changed where the LSM now is the facilitator of clears. You keep him on.
Yeah.
You want to keep the guy he was going against on as well. And if that guy runs off, you have an advantage because you have a guy pretty much uncovered, usually away from the box if you're running, you know, a reverse L or something like that, or he's coming back to the ball to start the break or over the line, even if the goalie's going to throw that outlet. You know, it's one of the most underrated changes, I think, in lacrosse of the last 5 years is the emergence of the ball handling aggressive LSM.
Yeah, I would agree.
So I think that's really cool. Before we move on, we talked a lot about Virginia. Obviously, people are interested in them. But, you know, Maryland, how do we feel about Maryland? As someone that has a close relationship, shall we say, with the team.
It's very interesting you ask that question, because I felt like what I saw from Maryland wasn't anything different than I, you know, had seen before. I felt it was kind of very straight up, a lot of what I saw last year, you know, like a lot of Rambo and Heacock running that two-man, trying to initiate offense through that. But I would say that I was really impressed with a lot of Maryland's, some of the new guys will be taking over the first midfield. I thought Tim Rotans looked explosive. He's a guy who's... He had to battle vertigo. He had to battle various injuries. He got in a full season last year and had a great year. And there's one guy who seems really primed to have, you know, finally have a really big year for Maryland. You know, he was a high-profile recruit. He's expected to be in this role. So it's finally good for him to kind of come along and see him make that progression. Another guy I was really impressed with was the freshman Jared Bernhardt. You know, he's a fast guy. He got a goal. And the surprise performance was actually Timmy Monahan, who kind of played both attack and midfield. I think he had at least 3 goals, and he may have had 4. So that's very interesting. He didn't see much time at all his freshman year. So for him to come on and be a new guy that is a threat, very interesting for Maryland.
How many keepers saw time in the game?
2, I believe. And Dan Morris kind of had the more notable outing. He had a brilliant save. Zed Williams on a sweep shot. You know, had a very hard shot. He made the stop, and then Joe French got the rebound off the save. He made a shot. He made the double save. That was his moment of brilliance in the game. It was definitely hard to gauge the goalies in this game because it was so high scoring, and it really did feel like both defenses were lacking in time together, time practiced. It just kind of felt like they weren't all there just yet. So, will this game be played out in a similar fashion if it was a semifinal? Probably not, but still, I would think a very high-scoring affair.
Okay. So, since it's the first week, we will be going to places to cover games.
Yes.
And we, being the IL staff,
yep.
I'll kind of tell everyone where I'm going later on. But we have publisher Terry Foy going to back to his home.
The land.
In the land, Believe Land, to watch Cleveland State take on Michigan in Cleveland State's first game of all time as a D1 program.
Very exciting.
So that's pretty exciting. And we also have Matt Kinnear going to Delaware to watch Delaware versus Bucknell. The highlights of that game provided by Serta Mattress.
Very true. And where are you going, Kyle?
I am headed to Friarland. My first trip to Providence College as they take on number 24 ranked Boston University, the Terriers. Very, very excited to check that out. I actually put it on Twitter that I was going there earlier today. Both teams reached out and said, welcome. So, good way to start the season. I guarantee you I won't get something like that at the end of the season, but it's cool to start anyway. I'm very excited to check that out.
See, once they get to know you, that's when they don't want you.
Yeah, man. Like, let's check in with Gabrielli, see what his temperature is. Quick anecdote. I played in Placid against Gabrielli a couple years ago, and he had no idea who I was until I told him. And the next time I got the ball, just like – complete slash into the elbow. Just like, I think he like cracked my arm pad.
Wow. Damn.
Which probably just is like a sign of respect. I took it as a sign of respect. Right?
Yeah.
No?
Maybe.
Probably not. I'm excited to talk to him after the game. And of course, Coach Polly at BU doing big things. Providence, by the way, ranked number 44 in Faceoff Yearbook heading into the season.
And I'm glad you're going to this game, because when I looked at the schedule, you know, for the first weekend, I kind of pegged this game as the sneaky good game. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean,
the sneaky good.
It's not just because of hashtag Isle North that I'm going. My schedule's already planned out for pretty much the whole season. You know, I can guarantee you I'll be going back to Providence for the Big East tournament. because they'll be hosting it. But this is my first visit there, and you know, maybe not the last. I think they're picked fourth or tied for fourth or whatever it is in our face-off yearbook because everyone's tied for everything. I know BU was tied with three teams for fifth in the Patriot League too. So I think these are teams with a lot to prove, hungry to defeat a local rival in all sports, especially hockey, which, by the way, I believe transitions us into our next segment. Why don't you take that away, Dan?
Yes, we are very, very pleased to have our first guest on the show. Barstool Jordy, one of my favorite Twitter followers. He's really known for hockey on the Twitterverse. He does a lot of hockey stuff for Barstool, but he's also one of their biggest lacrosse fans, so we're going to transition to our interview with him real quick. We welcome on to the show Jordan Demcher, otherwise known on Twitter as Barstool Jordy. How's it going today, Jordan?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me on here, fellas.
So, Jordy, you're kind of known on Twitter as, you know, like, really a big hockey guy. I know you do a lot of hockey stuff. We loved your coverage of the World Junior Championships, Feed the Gifts, all that jazz. It was really an A-plus production from you. But you're also one of Barstool's, you know, biggest personalities that also loves lacrosse. So kind of tell us about your connection to the sport a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what, I didn't make it easy on myself. You know, hockey and lacrosse are definitely two of the, you know, less popular sports in the country. But, you know, I'm out here trying to fight the good fight. But no, I mean, I grew up, I'm a Philly guy. I grew up in the area playing, you know, I've had a stick in my hand since I was like 9 or 10. So I was able to play all through high school. It took me to college. And now, now that I'm out of college and just, you know, kind of a lazy, just trying to spread the game a little bit on via the interwebs and keep fighting the good fight here.
What position?
I was an attackman. I can't run, can't play defense, but you know, I'm a lefty finisher inside.
But you you started on bench, right? You're the greatest bench player in Ursinus history.
Oh, that is definitely a fact. And if you if you were to go and pull any video from our practices, you'd think that I was Gary Gates' son. So as far as practices and warmups go, I'm a top-notch player. You know, kind of the Mikey Powell of the warmups. But once the game gets going, you know, I get myself comfortable on the bench and hopefully stay warm in February.
Listen, the world needs practice heroes. As a former coach, like, I appreciate
I was a practice hero, too. I played bench all throughout high school, so. And college, too, when I played club. But, Jordy, you also do, like, you know, coaching clinics with kids, right? Do you, like, what's your involvement with the sport now, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I do a lot of coaching right now. You know, I help out at the high school that I played at. Actually, just reigning Pennsylvania state champs, Springfield Delco, not a big deal or anything like that. But yeah, so I help out with the high school team, do some clinics for youth programs and everything. So, again, you know, the stick's in my hand probably, you know, 4 or 5 days a week. So, you know, I'm playing it all the time. I might as well be writing about it on the internet.
And you're also in a local Philadelphia beer league, correct?
Yeah, that's for hockey. And, That's pretty much the only, you know, competitive thing in my life that I have going on right now. So that's what keeps me waking up in the morning.
Where's the lacrosse beer league highlights?
We play in the summer. We have a, you know, a good group of guys that get a team together in the summer. And, you know, we were all pretty good in high school. All had, you know, decent, you know, times in college. And for some reason now when we play in the summer, we're just trash. So I'm not too comfortable bringing the camera out for those.
Fair enough.
The gel's just not there anymore.
So I know one thing me and Kyle want to talk to you about was your little stunt at NLL headquarters last week. Can you tell our listeners what you did and how it panned out?
Yeah, so I saw a little headline that said, you know, the commissioner of the league's thinking about bringing the Wings back, which I'm pretty sure now is almost guaranteed for, you know, maybe like 2018 or something. But I saw that headline, decided to write about it. And it was then that I found out that the league headquarters had just moved to Conshohocken, which is right outside Philadelphia. So I was like, that's outrageous that they're there. Like, how didn't I know about this before? why don't I just take the 15-minute drive right now over to headquarters and just, you know, suit up and see if I can make a good video out of that, see if I can get the wings there, see if I can get a tryout. So, I mean, it worked out, you know, kind of perfectly. You know, I showed up to HQ. There was minimal security there, which was perfect. So I was able to just, you know, walk right on up there in full gear, got my wings jersey on that I had since I was, like, 11. So the fact that that still fit was – that made me feel pretty good.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And it got like some traction with, I think the Nighthawks, right? Like they said, we're going to sign you, Jordy. We'll get you a tryout.
Yeah. The Nighthawks they've been big supporters, for a while now. I guess whoever runs their Twitter account's probably a stoolie, a follower of Barstool. But they've been, they've been supporting me all the way through. You know, I think I also may have grabbed the attention of the Lizards, who want to get me to go out there and embarrass myself for the outdoor league as well.
Always a good time.
I would pay money to see you D up Paul Rabil. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, or take a face off with Grenly and just get my wrist shattered to pieces. Be great for content.
That wouldn't be fun.
So another thing I wanted to ask you before we kind of like talk about this upcoming season is, what do you think about the perception of lacrosse within, like, the greater Barstool framework? We know that Hank Lockwood's a big fan, but El Prez, Big Cat, they seem to be a little skeptical about the sport growing.
Oh, yeah, but that's the way it is everywhere. You know, and I think us lacrosse guys, we're a nice, tight-knit community, and we always have each other's backs. But, you know, everyone else likes to rag on us a little bit. But, you know, that just gives us a chip on our shoulder, so... Or a chip on our midcalves, but you know, El Prez, he did step in the cage with Kieran McArdle last year for his goalie challenge and just got lit up. Where he's playing goalie against these NHL players, he's stonewalling them. So I think that has to make him respect the game a little bit, where he can, you know, he can shut down all these NHL guys, but as soon as he steps in on a Kieran McArdle shot, he's just getting cornered.
Everyone that doesn't play lacrosse thinks it's so easy because play like, oh, I played football. No. But like everyone thinks that. I mean, I'm from New England and everyone lacrosse, thinks that here.
So what did you, got cut from every other sport.
Got cut from baseball.
And yeah.
Like, no, nah, I actually ball. Run.
It's like, yeah, sorry, guy.
And what did you think about like Chris Hogan going off in that AFC championship game?
I mean, I love it just because, you know, as soon as he went off, you knew that the lacrosse community was going to grab onto that as hard as they possibly could. And it's great. You know, we deserve these little wins every now and then.
Yeah, we do.
You know, we get ragged on all the time. It's nice. It's nice to be in the W column for once.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to some season talk with you, man. Like, what do you think about, you know, like, I don't know if you've been keeping up with much. What do you think about our top 25? Are there any teams, you know, going into this season that you're particularly high on?
First off, I always have to give high praise to my boys at Albany. They're just a bunch of wild men, some savages who, you know, they really take on the mantra of look good, feel good, play good. But I think, if we're looking at Memorial Day weekend, it's about time that Matt Rambo and Maryland take it home.
I like this.
Again, as a Philly guy, I've been hearing about this Matt Rambo kid for at least 10 years now. You know, especially because I grew up playing against his older brother. So when we were, you know, in middle school, everyone's, oh, but Rambo, he has a younger brother, Matt, and all throughout high school. And the fact that he's still at Maryland, it feels like he's been there for like 8 years now. But it would be nice to see him, you know, finally win a championship there with the Terps.
If his name was less cool, would he be as good?
It's a perfect name for a Philly kid. It's just, you know.
That's what I thought.
Except is he killing cheesesteaks, though?
He better be. He better be. I mean, he's already bulked up enough, but he better be crushing cheesesteaks, crushing corners.
So you would say that Maryland is, you know, a lock for the Final Four this year? Is that what you're kind of saying? You think that he's going to get him there?
I mean, they've been in the championship game for the past 2 years, so he better. that's going to be a little blemish on him if he doesn't get them to the Final Four again.
And I just want to kind of like go into this real quick, because there really is a dynamic with Rambo and Philly. I know when we went to the press box, I mean, after the game, for the interviews, everybody wants to ask Rambo, like, what does it mean to play in Philadelphia on such a big stage and grow the game? And he's just, he's not one of those guys who's like filled with many words. And he's just like, yeah, man, it's pretty cool. But then, and then we have like five other journalists ask the same question, and it's the same answer.
Yeah, but, you know, I think, I mean, there is a little rocky to him. You know, he's not great with words, but if he wins a big one, we'll he could probably string some words together. Rocky IV, taking down Drago. You know, I think that he'll surprise us, be nice and eloquent when he's hoisting that trophy over his head.
So who is Drago then, if he's going to beat him?
Ooh.
That's a good question.
Yikes.
Is it Carolina again?
It might have.
Is it his buddy Austin Pafani? Carolina, also a Philly guy?
Abington, baby. Yeah, it might have to be. He might have to slay that dragon. Because, again, you know, Carolina killed him last year, and that's, you know, kind of – that's killing Apollo Creed. So.
This is a really complex metaphor. I don't know if you've listened to the podcast before. Dan is not great with metaphors. Dude, so we should probably, like, move on to a different topic. Just to be real with you.
I think it works, but I think any more and it'll, you know, turn my brain into too much of a pretzel that I won't be able to perform for the rest of the week.
There we go.
Now, I know another player that you were really high on last year was freshman phenom Patrick Spencer. What do you think about his prospects going into this season? Do you think he over under 89 points?
Dude, Pat Spencer is a stud. A stud. He'll get 6-7 points a game. You know, he could even come out in the fourth quarter for most games and still get there. So that kid is unbelievable. I would like to see a Pat Spencer, Matt Rambo square off. Just not even Maryland versus Loyola in the championship game. I just want to see Rambo and Pat Spencer just go Braveheart at it, and I would pay however much money HBO would need me for a pay-per-view for that one.
Very nice. What do you think about Brown's prospects this year? They still got human Tonka truck, Dylan Malloy, but they lose a bunch of other guys, get a new coach, lose Lars Tiffany to Virginia. What do you think about their prospects going into this season?
Yeah, I do think that losing a coach, especially coming off the year that they just had there, is going to be tough to overcome. You know, you had a lot of chemistry, you had everything kind of working at the exact right time, and everyone's in the exact right place for it all to come together for them last year. And then you take away a huge, huge chunk of the puzzle like that. They'll have a great year. I don't see them in the Final Four weekend. Malloy, he's also a beast. I wish that he was a Philly guy, because that'd be a great guy to pride around.
And do you have any other thoughts on, you know, any other teams you're really looking forward to watching this year? I know for me, we want to see Denver, teams like that. I also want to see how Duke and Virginia pan out. Is there anybody you're interested in seeing play this year?
I mean, Virginia, maybe not this year, but I do think that Virginia, I mean, they get like the top recruiting class every year. And now with Lars Tiffany in there, with a little bit of a resurgence for them, that'll be good for a couple years to come. But I think the team that I really just want to see go on a glorious run, the Great Danes of Albany. I love those guys.
I don't know why you're laughing, Dan. They're definitely like a dark horse for like,
no, they are definitely
Final
a dark
Four
horse.
For
I
sure.
I love that story you did last year. Can you actually give us a little background on how you kind of this story came to fruition? Because I remember when Barstool did post it, it did make a bunch of waves in the lacrosse world.
Yeah, I mean, the boys at Albany, they're you know, they look as great off the field as they do on the field, because they're just, you know, mullets and crazy like Fu Manchu mustaches, and so you know, they. One of the guys on the team, they said, hey, man, check out our bios on the roster online. And I was like, all right, like, whatever. And I go onto the internet, and I'm just meted by just 40 guys that are just savages, just look like wild men. And I knew right then and there that that was going to be my team. You know, especially with a kid like Blaze Reardon, you know, leading the way. And that's, you know, that's a guy when the Philadelphia Wings do come back to town, I need Big Daddy Blaze in Philly wearing a Wings uniform. And then we're going to be best friends and I can be in his pro lacrosse entourage.
So I know our listeners don't know this, but me and Kyle actually met you at Final Four weekend last year in Philadelphia. We came around to your tailgate briefly. We got to meet you. It was awesome. Are you or any of the other Barstool guys kind of like planning maybe a little lacrosse trip this year, a little lacrosse coverage? Know of anything in the works?
Nothing's in the works right now. Most of the Barstool crew is in Houston right now for the Super Bowl. So, I mean, if we can get them out to Houston for the Super Bowl, I think we could probably get them out to championship weekend for lacrosse. I mean, I put that weekend over Super Bowl Sunday 10 times out of 10.
Oh, absolutely.
So, but no, nothing's in the works yet. But that's kind of the way that Barstool does work, where, you know, nothing's planned until, you know, the week of. So we'll see as we get closer to Memorial Day weekend.
And what about you? Will we see you somewhere along the trail at some game, whether it be Final Four weekend, maybe a Hopkins game, Albany game? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to make my way to Albany for a game. Yeah, you know, you never know where I'll pop up. Just wherever there's a net, I'm there to, you know, sting some corners or miss high and wide.
All right, first of all, Dan, we're not going to let him go until we ask him about the Mighty Ducks stuff he wrote. Because I need to know all about it, everything, how it went down. I love how you murdered someone in the first act. Tell me everything. Tell our listeners everything.
Yeah, so for the guys who, you know, are listening out, guys and girls, who are listening, first off, sup girls, who are listening who haven't read the post, I pretty much wrote the script for D4, the Mighty Ducks. You know, growing up as a kid, those were movies that I would watch, you know, 1, 2, and 3. And then that would take up what, like 6 hours of my day. The next 6 hours of my day were watching 1, 2, and 3 again, just on repeat 24/7, addicted to the Ducks. So it's been, you know, 20 years since the first one came out, I believe, or maybe since the last one was released. I don't know. It's whatever it is. It makes me feel old. But it's been far too long without keeping up with the boys again. So I figured I'd write the script for Mighty Ducks D4, see if I could kind of jumpstart that process. I mean, spoiler alert, unfortunately I had to kill off Fulton, it was a tough one to swallow. I mean, I wrote it.
You need an inciting incident though. You need a reason.
The thing is I wrote it, I knew it was coming, and I still cried when I killed him. I've had the idea to write the script for D4 for a while. It was a slow weekend. I had nothing else going on, so I figured I'd just hop on my computer and type away. And luckily the reception of it was pretty well. I think, I think that there's a huge group of Duck fanatics out there in the world, who are just waiting for this. And I'm just humbled that I could provide it for them.
Mighty Ducks 2 is the most underrated sports movie of all time.
Yes, I was about to say Mighty Ducks 2 is like, my favorite.
Nope.
Yeah,
great.
I mean,
just so stop. Good. You're good.
That's the thing. That's, you know, that's when America was truly at its greatest, when we're taking down Iceland and Gunnar Stahl for the Goodwill Junior Games gold. That combined with Rocky taking down Drago.
Seminal moments in U.S. history, for sure.
Exactly.
Agree.
All right, so Jordy, before we let you go, I want to ask you three questions that I usually ask a lot of players. So since you're a former player, we'll ask you, and then I have one specific hockey question for you at the end. But the first question I have for you is, name three pregame pump-up songs from your time at Ursinus. What were the three?
Ooh.
Ursinus.
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 God.
Here's the thing. I was never allowed to pick the music at her sinus. I tried multiple times. All the time, I would make a CD for the locker room for the warmups, and as soon as I would put it in, someone else would come in, take it out of the CD player, snap it right in front of my face, maybe stomp on it a little bit. So I have no idea what any of the songs were. But if I had to, you know, pick some songs myself, I'd probably go with, I'll tell you what, when I was in college, I was a big time Asher Roth fan.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. So, I was at school right around the time of that frat rap was going. So throw some Asher on there. I'd hang out a little bit and then, but I wasn't a big time like screamo guy or hardcore rap. That never got me going. I needed some chill music to get ready to chill on the bench.
All right. And before you got on the bench, did you have a pregame meal of choice or did you have a postgame meal of choice?
Pregame meal of choice, always a peanut butter and jelly. If it was a big game, I would do a peanut butter and jelly on a bagel. But always toasted. Sometimes I would switch up what kind of jelly. Strawberry jelly, underrated. Very underrated. I feel like a lot of people only think of peanut butter and jelly with grape jelly, but switch it up to strawberry every now and then and your life will be better.
All right. Third question is, based on, you know, your experience as a player, what those guys like to eat, do you think there should be an unofficial official meal of lacrosse?
An unofficial meal. I mean, I feel like the easy answer here would be like crabs or whatever.
Crabs. Wow. I've actually never heard that response yet.
I mean, I'll tell you, I would do, if I could do a post game meal of choice and just get a nice big crab cake sandwich with some coleslaw on it. Yeah. I mean, that would be a good lax meal.
Wow. Kyle, that's more Maryland than me, man.
That's pretty Maryland.
Yeah. And then you just load up a shot glass full of Old Bay seasoning.
See, we have this running gag that either people will choose Chipotle or chicken parm as the official meal. So actually, you coming in with the crab cake, that's a little bit of a curveball. So we appreciate that response. All right, final question before we let you go. This is your wheelhouse, hockey. But if you had to pick right now, who's winning the Stanley Cup?
Oof, put me
and
on.
And why is it the Capitals?
Be honest. Oh my God. You don't even watch hockey. Stop it. Stop it.
The Caps, you guys deserve to have a parade if you make it to the conference final. I think that'll be a huge step for you guys. That'll be great. I'll be very happy if they make it to the final. They won't be winning the Stanley Cup this year because I wish I could get on here and say that the Flyers are. As a Philly guy, that's not going to happen. Let's get crazy a little bit and say that Connor McDavid wins it all.
Dan has no idea who that is.
Yo, Jordy, we appreciate you coming on the show, man. We're all big fans. We definitely want to see you keep up the hockey coverage, the Please Like My Sport coverage. So thank you for coming on, and we'll see you next time, bud.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Really, really enjoyed myself here.
Definitely let us know if you're coming to Memorial Day as well.
Absolutely. See what we can do. All right, go Terps.
All right, so we come back. Barcelo Jordy was great. Let's talk more about Providence BU. What are you looking for in this game, Kyle? And what are the things to watch, so to speak?
I think Santaco at the X is, you know, going to be huge for BU. I think he could finish. I mean, last year he finished in the top, at least the top 10, if not the top 5, in faceoff winning percentage. I think this year he can be top 3. I think he's one of the most underrated players in the country. And you could say the same thing on the other end for defenseman Jared Newman of Providence, who is a athletic specimen. I've seen tape of him. I think the last time I saw him, they played against Duke, either last year or the year before. And he was the guy that looked like he belonged. Mm-hmm. He looked real good. And I think that's kind of where we're going to go. With that, it's going to be those two. I think, you know, it's not often you pick like a faceoff guy and a defense guy as like the two guys to watch in a game. But I like to look at the game otherwise than just offense.
Yeah.
Even though everyone knows I love goals. Yeah. Everyone loves goals. Who doesn't like home runs?
Yeah.
Like I love
paltry 0-0 affairs.
Yeah, sure. But I'm excited to see those two guys' impact on the game, whether or not BU can kind of withstand their offensive assault on the goal without scoring. I think we talked about this before.
Yeah.
They just need to get the shots on goal, man.
Yeah.
Like, miss the goal a lot, get a lot of great opportunities, manufacture great offense, great down picks to set up their attackmen for good sweeps and shots off the catch. I mean, you know, it's an offense that can be one of the best in college lacrosse. It's just a matter of, can they finish the ball?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not going to make a pick for this game. I don't like doing picks. I hate doing picks.
This is the only.
I'm sure we're going to get to a point where we make picks because we're going to have to. But I'm not going to do it.
Okay.
I'm not going to do it. Let me flip things back on you real quick.
Wait, hold up. One thing. Do you think this will be a high scoring game?
For one team, it will.
Okay. BU.
I
he's not making picks. Oh, okay.
Nah, I'm not making a pick. I'm not making a pick. I'm just saying one team is going to score a lot.
Okay. What were you going to throw back to me?
Might struggle to do that. I think one other thing we participated in this week together.
LaxCon?
No. That was last week. This week, our votes in the top 20 poll.
Ooh, yeah.
How do we feel about talking about it real quick?
Go ahead.
Do you remember?
I actually do. I have my list right on my phone. I'll get it up real quick.
Well, that's
the main thing for me with this poll was that I think Zach Miller, no longer with DU, that actually bumped them out for me. I think I moved Denver to 3 and North Carolina up to 2. But for the large part, my top 20 has remained unchanged from our initial podcast where I did my top 15, but I just added in the remaining 5 teams.
So you kept Hopkins at 4.
They're still at 4. They're looking good,
what
man.
What are you doing? Why are you doing that?
Dude, they've got a deep and athletic midfield.
Stop.
Okay.
Stop. Why? You think Hopkins is how many – don't you have Hopkins – like, I'm looking at the final poll. Don't you have Hopkins like 5 or 6 spots higher than Notre Dame?
Yeah.
I think you need to justify that to the audience.
I mean
– I really think you do.
I mean, this is just my own train of thought. I think Johns Hopkins has – so much returning, you know, fifth-year guy in Reed, Connor Reed. You know, Joel Tinney didn't play in their scrimmage on Saturday, but I'm expecting him to be there. They've also got Stanwyck. They've also got so many guys that I just think are going to have big years. And they're finally going to make that jump from sophomore to junior output, and I think that they're going to have a fantastic season.
You're either going to be a genius or vilified on Twitter.
But I will say this. They lost Patrick Foley. We found that out, I believe, Sunday. That's a huge loss. You know, a really, really great young player who they were seeming to build themselves around. So we obviously talked about this earlier, but Hopkins' defense is a problem for them. It just got a lot harder for them. So.
And you still have them at 4.
That's because I think they're going to score a lot of goals. I think they're going to. I feel like their specialists are pretty good. They're going to, you know, win more faceoffs than they lose, and I think their LSMs are going to help out as well.
Hey man, I'm just preparing you for the assault that's coming. I'm just trying to prep you. I'm on your side.
I mean, it's a funny dynamic because I feel like most Hopkins fans, they don't want the high rating. They're like, all right, we had the high rating last year and we did not have a great year because everybody got hurt. But now that they have, you know, a less than stellar, you know, rating, I think they're like, all right, this is great. We can, you know, takes the pressure off the guys on the team. They can finally have a good season.
I mean, I can tell you in my poll, I definitely put Maryland 1.
Okay.
Which is probably same shocking to you.
A little.
I had UNC 2.
Okay.
I had Denver 3.
Okay.
And 4 was Notre Dame for me because I'm not insane. And I think, you know, I think I had 5. You know, I'm looking at the list. I'm pretty sure I had Loyola at 5.
Okay.
And then this is the one that's going to get me in trouble. I believe I had Albany at 6.
Whoa. Okay.
I believe in both those teams. Is that weird?
No.
I feel like that's super weird.
Loyola and Albany?
Yeah.
No. I mean, I'm really high on Loyola. I think reading Quint Kessnick's top 20 today, he had Loyola as high as 3. So I think nobody's joking around with Loyola. I think everybody's going to, in consensus, that they're going to have a really big year.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have Albany at 14. So for you to put them at 6,
yeah, a little bit. I think you had them at 6 or 7, and I had Yale maybe transposed with them. And then I had Brown, And then Cuse, and then Hop, I think.
Okay.
So, like, top 10, and then Towson, then Navy, Duke, and, oh, man, Virginia's in this poll at 15?
Yeah.
In our final poll? I don't know how I feel about that. I definitely had votes for, you can see at the bottom, receiving votes.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of those are me.
Okay.
Penn, Ohio State are me. Bryant is me. I definitely have Bryant at 20. So let me ask you this. How do you go about your voting? Like, what's your process? Is the first 10's easy, right?
Yes.
Is that how you feel? Okay.
I think it's different for different people. I think there's a certain level of teams that they go into the poll with saying, I know these teams should be in this place. And after a certain point, it really becomes befuddled. It becomes smoggy. And right. I would say after maybe 13, is for me, was when things become like, all right, this team should be here, but I don't know if they're necessarily a lot better than the next team who's behind them.
Yeah. I mean, I basically throw a rock 15 to 20 sometimes.
Yeah.
There's not much you can do, especially early in the season. This poll is like impossible.
It's worthless after the games.
It's like, you know, not to bring in a soccer analogy, but back in the day, they used to do the Premier League table. They wouldn't put it up until like 5 weeks after the season happened.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to get like all this false bravado and all these like results that don't matter. Anything else jump out at you in the overall poll that got posted today?
Not exactly. I mean, I'm definitely on board with Penn being higher than wherever they are.
They're not even ranked.
I know, which is why
it's crazy.
I actually have them at 20 in my ranking. I'm huge on them this year, and I think they should definitely be in the top 20.
What about Ohio State?
So this is interesting you mentioned them, because I feel like when I was doing my rankings, that was one team that fell into that foggy area, and I actually decided to leave them out.
I mean, we have Air Force on here instead of Ohio State?
Yeah.
And Penn? How do we feel about that? I don't feel great about that, to be honest.
I mean, the thing is, you know, Air Force, 15 straight wins last season. They are a proven bunch, you know?
Yeah, they lost some talent, though. I mean, Gouchot in net was the star in that Duke game.
Yeah.
And he was that rock for most of the season, and he is no longer there. So, I don't know. I'm big on goalie role with teams that are hot.
Okay.
Like, if you look at all the surprise teams and kind of almost the entire history of lacrosse for the last 10 years at least, the teams that got hot, that came out of nowhere, they all had a good goalie.
Yeah.
They all had a good goalie. And not good, great.
Yeah.
Excellent. You know, that's why I'm worried about Towson a little bit. I'm a little worried. There's no Tyler White there.
Yeah.
I'm a little concerned. You know, if I'm honest, a little concerned for Albany.
Yeah.
My boy Blaze.
He's no longer there.
No longer a Dane.
Scoring goals.
It's one of 14 Americans playing in the NLL now. I mean, you know, it's. I think we're in a murky place. I'm not surprised to see Villanova on here making their yearly appearance in the top 20.
Yeah.
For now. So, you know, I think everything else is pretty above board. But I think this ranking is going to, you know, not change much for at least the first couple of weeks, because a lot of these teams don't play meaningful games except for Hopkins playing Navy.
Yeah.
In the first 2 weeks of the season.
And then Navy plays Maryland in their second game.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so Navy is going to be surfing USA on this poll.
You Navy heads, we're going to find out if you're real in 2 games.
Yeah, that's a tough way to start a season, because if they lose both their games, we're still going to consider them one of the better teams in the country. And that's when our job gets hard. How do we evaluate
them? I don't know about this we're talking about. That's a you statement. You got to win one of those 2 games to stay for me. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You just do.
Yeah.
Because the rest of your schedule is Patriot League.
Yeah.
Those are the two marquee games in the entire Navy schedule. If you don't win one of those, like, you don't have a signature win. Yeah. You're going to have to win your tournament.
Exactly.
Right?
Isn't
that what we're looking at?
I would agree.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of our thoughts on this opening weekend of NCAA lacrosse. Our thoughts on the poll this week. We were going to do a thing where I pulled up all of Dan's tweets and told him which ones were good and which ones were trash.
Because apparently I stink at Twitter.
I just want you to be better, man. It's not that you're bad. I believe in you, and I want you to succeed on Twitter's forum. I really do.
appreciate really that, Kyle.
We'll definitely, but most of these are tweets about UVA Maryland. So you were right. You were right that your Twitter does get better during the season.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
Because I got ideas, man. I don't got analogies, yeah. But I got ideas.
Yeah, you got ideas. You don't have analogies, and you don't have bars. But you don't have to.
Yes.
You don't have to.
I appreciate
you host
that.
A podcast. You already famous.
Yeah, I'm low key famous.
Don't worry about it. We just got Barstool Jordy on here.
You were
laughing like a schoolgirl. Yeah. Kidding me?
Dog.
Best day of your life. Best day of your life. Second best day of your life.
This podcast is quickly coming to an end. Okay.
we're definitely pushing in that direction. I just wanted to know.
Everybody, thank you for listening. Please stay tuned next week where we'll have a fantastic recap of the weekend, talk about all the lacrosse action. We personally cannot wait. So I'm Dan Abrams signing off.
I'm Kyle Devitt. I'm the Gear and Lifestyle Editor at Inside Lacrosse. You can follow me on Twitter at TheKyleDevitt and also on Instagram where I'm gaining followers steadily despite having a garbage feed.
And you can follow me on Twitter at DanAbrams2423. I've been gaining some followers too. I'm getting up there, even though I stick at Twitter. But thank you for listening. We will see you next week.
Thanks, guys.